Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Such pleasure to have you with us. Hope you had a great weekend. If you caught the Oscars telecast last night, hope you enjoyed it. Next hour, we're going to hear what you thought of it, both as a show and what you thought of the Academy's choices in the top categories. What you thought was missing from the nominees this year, we'll hear a whole range of listener input coming up. That's in our second hour, right at the top, here on Air Talk on KPECC. But this hour, plenty of big political news for us to talk about. Bernie Sanders' campaign has just officially filed a partial challenge to the results in Iowa. We hope to find out a little bit more about what that means, what Sanders is specifically asking for in the way of a re-canvass or recount. As you might have heard over the weekend, Pete Buttigieg just by a nose got it over Bernie Sanders. But there are a lot of questions. And AP, for example, refused to accept that those are the results of the Iowa caucuses because of concerns over what happened with the app and other communication breakdowns in Iowa. But we had a debate that took place Friday night in Manchester, New Hampshire, because tomorrow the big New Hampshire primary, as you just heard on NPR News, the stakes are very high, really, for all of the candidates. Now, Bernie Sanders is polling the best in New Hampshire. He was right there with Pete Buttigieg at the top in Iowa. So the Sanders momentum is very clear. And in Friday night's debate, Joe Biden took jabs at the electability of Sanders, as well as the fellow front runner out of Iowa, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
With regard to Senator Sanders, the president wants very much to stick a label on every candidate. We're going to not only have to win this time, we have to bring along the United States Senate. And Bernie's labeled himself, not me, a Democratic Socialist. I think that's the label that the president's going to lay on everyone running with Bernie if he's a nominee. And Mayor Buttigieg is a great guy and a real patriot. He's a mayor of a small city who has done some good things, but has not demonstrated he has the ability to, and we'll soon find out, to get a broad scope of support across the spectrum, including African Americans and Latinos.
And Pete Buttigieg was pushed at Friday's debate to talk about increasing number of African-American resident arrests for marijuana possession while Buttigieg was mayor. And then you'll hear Elizabeth Warren come in a little bit later.
We adopted a strategy that said that drug enforcement would be targeted in cases where there was a connection to the most violent group or gang connected to a murder.
Senator Warren, is that a substantial answer from Mayor Buttigieg?
No. You have to own up to the facts. And it's important to own up to the facts about how race has totally permeated our criminal justice system. You know, for the exact same crime, study after study now shows that African Americans are more likely than whites to be detained, to be arrested, to be taken to trial, to be wrongfully convicted, and to receive harsher sentences.
Healthcare was once again a very big topic at Friday night's debate. Several candidates criticized Bernie Sanders' stance on a single-payer system in lieu of private insurance. Here's what Minnesota's Amy Klobuchar said.
I keep listening to this same debate, and it is not real. It is not real, Bernie, because two-thirds of the Democrats in the Senate are not on your bill, and because it would kick 149 million Americans off their current health insurance in 4 years.
And Joe Biden went after Bernie Sanders, saying there's not a funding plan to work on his single-payer plan, and Sanders went back against the Affordable Care Act.
But the studies show, if we do what Joe wants, we'll be spending some $50 trillion on healthcare over the next 10 years. That's the status quo, Joe. That's what Health and Human Services says. We are spending twice as much per capita on healthcare as do the people of any other country. Maybe it has something to do with the fact that the healthcare industry last year made $100 billion in profit.
All right, those just a few of the major points that were made at Friday night's Democratic candidate debate in Manchester, New Hampshire. Joining us from Manchester, Politico reporter covering the New Hampshire primary, Trent Spinner. Trent, good to have you with us again. Know you were at the debate Friday night as well. Just sort of top line for you, what was your biggest impression from the debate?
Well, so I have been giving out my cell phone numbers to voters, I mean, like probably a couple hundred voters, and I asked them to text me anytime you have a political thought. I don't care if it's at 3 a.m. and I can't get back to everybody, but especially when debates are happening, there's this really funny, it's just like live streaming stream of consciousness from New Hampshire voters, and overwhelming, people said that they thought Amy Klobuchar was doing really well, and we're going to take another look at her.
That's interesting. So Klobuchar, at least anecdotally, seemed to be rising in New Hampshire. She's distinguished herself, in my opinion, with every one of her debate performances. She's very strong. The challenge has seemed to be to get people excited about her. And so when the voters tell you, Trent, that they want to take another look at her, are you sensing enthusiasm around her or not?
You know, it's hard for somebody like Amy Klobuchar, who doesn't have the rah, rah, rah on the stage that other candidates like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren have, and even to some degree Pete Buttigieg, to kind of break through the noise. But, you know, the thing about these events is that we have to consider as reporters, you know, these may be 4, 5, 6, 1,000, 2,000 people, but there are going to be hundreds of thousands of people who vote here tomorrow who didn't have time to go to events and didn't really have time to watch the debates, who will just kind of take a quick look at all the candidates, see where the issues line up. And here's something interesting that Klobuchar has been doing. I spent about 3 days with her on the trail a few weeks ago, and as she was campaigning, she used the names of our two senators here 40 times. She really is trying to paint herself as this moderate Democrat who can get elected, who is familiar to New Hampshire. And the question is yet to be seen whether that works and whether she can kind of align herself with elected officials in New Hampshire who have won elections and know how to do it.
Trent, what's happening with television advertising there? Who's showing up most on the airwaves or via social media ads?
Well, first of all, if you are in New Hampshire this week, you are being hammered by political advertising. I think something like $10 million in political advertising is happening. And it's not just on TV. It's also on YouTube and streaming services. And so, you know, the joke is anytime you want to watch a video on your computer or whatever, you're going to see a Tom Steyer ad or you're going to see Bernie Sanders. So Bernie Sanders is definitely winning the airwaves here. They're spending a ton of money, in some cases two or three times what other candidates are spending. So, you know, and he already had name recognition. He won here in 2016 against Hillary Clinton with 60% of the vote. You know, so there's a lot of advertising happening. The other thing that's interesting, and I know this is a long answer, but is their campaign operation on the ground. Bernie Sanders has an operation that's, you know, two or three times bigger than any other campaign, and these people are out knocking on doors and calling voters. And they're really relentless about it.
Bernie Sanders seems to get favorite son advantage because he's a senator of a neighboring state to New Hampshire. Is there any of that neighboring native daughter effect for Elizabeth Warren? Because same thing, you know, next door state where she's senator.
You know, there's this whole there's this narrative, this trope of the favorite son thing. And I just don't, you know, this is my fifth primary and I just don't think that that's true. I think the fact is that Sanders actually speaks to a number of issues that are really important to New Hampshire. For example, New Hampshire has some of the highest student loan debt per capita in the country. And, you know, that's something that both Warren and Sanders talk about a lot. And so I think it's more the issues. Like no one's ever said to me, hey, Trent, I'm going to vote for Bernie Sanders because he lives 50 miles away.
No, people don't say that, but they're just, you know, much more exposed to someone. And certainly there's not going to be the question of whether they understand what their lives are about if they're from a neighboring state.
You're absolutely right. And I think Senator Klobuchar, for example, has a you know, it's more difficult for her to come in here. And I think maybe that's why she's angling the way she is. And Sanders won here with more than 60% of the vote. So, you know, there's that. And the other campaigns are pointing to his polling numbers now. he's somewhere in the mid-20s and saying, you know, as much as he may win New Hampshire, it's a sign of weakness that he's only winning with 20-25% of the vote. The other thing, to get back to your question about Senator Warren, who is not doing as well here in the polls, the thing is, there are a lot of people from Massachusetts, and she has, I think, one of the best organizations in terms of, like, just being able to get people out to events or to the polling place. And so, yeah, I think that some people in the national media have started to write her off, but I would be careful about doing that.
You expecting a huge turnout for the primary tomorrow?
You know what? I was actually just – I'm writing a story about that as we speak. The chairman of the party just did a conference call with reporters and said, actually, you should not expect high turnout. He said, this will not be the historic turnout in 2008 where there was Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. He said he made an interesting point, which is that, you know, some voters just haven't made up their mind, and so they're not going to vote. But that's because they are willing to accept whoever the party eventually nominates. And he said that as much as they may not come out tomorrow, they will be there in November.
All right. Hey, Trent, thank you so much. I'm sure you're very busy covering everything going on there in New Hampshire today, and you've been there for several days. Thank you for taking the time with us once again on Air Talk.
Anytime. Thanks.
Thank you, Politico reporter Trent Spinner. He's in New Hampshire in the town of Manchester there at the debate on Friday night and covering all the events over the course of Saturday and yesterday and getting set for tomorrow's New Hampshire primary, the first of the primaries following, of course, what was last Monday's Iowa caucuses. With us from Emerge America, president of that organization, which identifies and trains Democratic women to hold public office, Amanda Renteria. Amanda, thank you very much for being with us. As you look at New Hampshire, kind of what do you see the lay of the land is looking like?
Well, I think this is a reset. Almost every Democrat has taken a look at this as though it's the beginning of Iowa again. So it has a new, it has a new attention that I think it usually doesn't have. And listen, I think what the chairman said at the very end, the Democratic Party chair there, about making sure that we understand what's happening with the electorate is people are very undecided, and that has somewhat paralyzed the electorate that's out there, which means you're seeing an intensity within the candidates because they know they've got to do whatever they can on the ground to differentiate themselves, but also to fire folks up to get out and vote. And so it is going to be one that more people are watching than usual. And I think what you're seeing on the ground is Sanders' effort. He has to win this. It very much feels like he won by 20 points last time. You got to make sure you get out of this at the top of the ticket as well. But no one's making this easy at all because people are fighting for it. And everybody knows this is their second chance and really a much bigger chance to really break through, especially for folks like Amy.
Also with us is Rob Sussman, Republican political consultant, president of Sussman Public Affairs, and former deputy chief of staff to California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. Rob, thank you very much for being with us. Your sense of kind of how the candidates are consolidating at this point, the lanes they're trying to find, is there anyone at this point you see as essentially being on the ropes?
Well, we saw a lot of mixed messaging out of the polling that came out of New Hampshire this weekend. But one thing seemed to be clear is that Joe Biden is on the ropes. Some of that is because of a less than stellar showing in Iowa. But it does appear that Klobuchar and certainly Buttigieg, you know, really may be cutting into this long frontrunner status that he had enjoyed for so long, which is largely based on name identification. He even went off the road for a couple of weeks in New Hampshire this week. So there's signs as a candidate that he's weakening. And I even thought that his debate performance on Friday night had some whiff of desperation, especially juxtaposed to what a great night someone like Amy Klobuchar had. And I think Mayor Pete had a very solid night as well. So I think that it would be that it looks like there's a trend here working against Biden. Now, the good news is expectations are starting to get lower. So if he does fight through somehow into, let's say, a second place finish, I think would also would buoy him a great deal.
Well, and it hasn't so much of his emphasis been, even before the lackluster showing in Iowa, that South Carolina, with its significant African-American voting population, that would really be where Joe Biden's candidacy would kick in, Rob.
That's right. That's the firewall narrative of the Biden campaign in South Carolina. The question has always been, if you run fourth and fourth in Iowa and New Hampshire, does that firewall start to weaken? And we shouldn't forget that Nevada here is before Super Tuesday as well. So the firewall may hold, but does it barely hold, or does it actually start to fall away if he starts to disintegrate? And there's a lot of questions around finance regarding the Biden campaign. His fundraising has, especially with small donors, has never been able to compete with some of the rivals in the race like Sanders, Warren, and Buttigieg. And will he be able to keep fueling this thing into Super Tuesday if it's fourth, and a narrow first place in South Carolina?
We're going to take a brief break. We'll continue our conversation, but we've got some sports news for you. The Los Angeles Chargers of the NFL have announced they are not going to be re-signing veteran quarterback Philip Rivers. Rivers has spent his entire professional career as the quarterback for the Chargers, his contract expiring at the end of this past season. Questions as to whether the Chargers would re-sign him or go with a younger quarterback. The Chargers announcing they will not be attempting to re-sign Philip Rivers, who said he has every intention of continuing his professional career. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. We'll continue with our look at politics in 1 minute. Wonderful to have you with us today on Air Talk. If you watched the Oscars last night, we're going to get to that in the second hour. Hear what you thought about the choices of the Academy membership as well as the program as a show. What did you think of the production? Also, if you want to ask questions of our political experts in the course of this conversation, our lines are open at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722. We're talking with Republican political consultant Rob Stutzman and the president of Emerge America, which works with Democratic women to train them for higher office, Amanda Renteria. Amanda, one of the things that we hear is kind of a narrative, much repeated, is that Democratic institutional folks are very concerned about Bernie Sanders' strong start here and that he could be the nominee, a Democratic socialist, and concerns that he'd be wiped out in the general election by President Trump. First of all, do you think that there is that degree of concern? And secondly, do you think, as many in the Sanders campaign seem to indicate, that sort of infrastructure is going to do its best to work against Bernie?
You know, I think there's definitely a conversation going on about Democratic socialist and what that would do in places like Florida, what that would do to really Democratic Party and whether that is a winnable title. And you are beginning to see folks get a little uncomfortable in this, in general, in this race, that it isn't solidifying faster. And so some of this is about the Democratic Socialist term, but some of it is just about a general unsettling. And by the way, Iowa didn't help any of that, right? People feel like, where is the Democratic Party? How can we unify? And then on top of that, you saw that Trump had a very good week last week, and it feels like he has full reign from the Republican Party. And so there's a lot of just uncertainty out there. So it's not surprising to me to hear people start to weigh in, and you are going to see that more and more. And so we're unsettled right now, but this is a long primary process, and things change week by week.
Rob, when you look at polling of Republicans and the extraordinary degree of support members of the party have for President Trump, something like 95% approval rating among Republicans, it would seem that the never-Trumpers, the critics of the president, have left the Republican Party at this point, not identifying themselves as Republicans. When you look at that approval rating, but look at the president, even though he had a very good week, he's at 49% overall. What are your thoughts about the likelihood of how that plays out in a general election?
Well, the president has it's the ultimate base politics, and he likes to trumpet the number you cited about this, you know, stellar support within the Republican Party. What needs to be understood, though, is that those are people that are self-selecting to be Republicans, and I think there's an increasing number of people that have selected out of the party. Now, there's no question there's people that are selecting into it under Trump. The Republican Party, in terms of appeal to the voters that identify as Republicans, about the same as it was under George W. Bush, but it's very different. And the question is there any room for it to grow beyond that base? He shows very little attention to going beyond base, except this past week we see things where there's obvious overt outreach to African-American voters. The ad that ran from the Trump campaign during the Super Bowl addressed criminal justice reform using African-American woman as a testimonial in the ad. And obviously the State of the Union made some appeals directly to African-Americans. So there seems to be this sense strategically that they know they need to somehow reach beyond their base. But his reflex, when left off a teleprompter or out of scripted TV ads, is to really, really chew on that base vote that seems to feed his ego so satisfactorily to him.
If it's one of the progressive Democrats, a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, or if it was a more moderate, a Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, or Joe Biden, do you think that it's a big difference between someone from one group than versus the other in a general election matchup, or is it more related to the individual candidate?
I think the further you go with nominating a progressive, like certainly Sanders or even Warren, the more risk the Democrats are taking with this election. I think something more of in a centrist lane, whether Biden revives himself or Mike Bloomberg, you know, swings through with his strategy and becomes the nominee, then I think Democrats potentially could have electoral landslide. States like, you know, Florida, I think, really becoming back into play for them. The other thing to remember, though, is Trump wins over Clinton because it's a low turnout election. I mean, base Democrats did not come out and vote for Hillary, especially African Americans in the urban centers of the Rust Belt, where Trump, you know, pulled off his jujitsu with the Electoral College. So, you know, even Sanders, as long as he can generate that base turnout, I think it's still very viable to beat Trump. But, you know, higher risk, that does start to accrue some favor to the president at some point further left that the Dems go.
Amanda Renteria, you agree with that?
You know, I think one of the things that's missing in this conversation, and of course we're not there yet, but there is going to be a vice presidential pick in this. And I think when you think about someone like a Warren or a Sanders, who is their pair? And what is that going to bring to the discussion? And I think that could temper some of the concerns that I know a lot of the Democratic Party have right now. But certainly, you know, we're going to see this shape up. And as this moves forward, candidates are learning a message and they're figuring out how to really build the biggest coalition, which is very different than what we're seeing out of Trump himself. So, you know, I still think as we look forward, the biggest tent in a highly intense election is the Democratic Party. And that is helpful for numbers and how this thing moves forward in terms of giving Democrats an advantage as we go into November.
I so typically, Amanda, hear experts say that there's all this talk about who's the VP on the ticket, and yet it doesn't move the needle much. But what you're saying is because of the factionalism within the party, you think that it could have a disproportionate effect, the person chosen as the VP candidate?
Absolutely. I think not only where that VP candidate comes from, but the kind of way they fire up the base. And I think people are going to look to that VP candidate as we get closer to the convention. It'll be more of a discussion. It hasn't been the discussion yet because we have such a fluid presidential platform right now.
Hard to imagine if it was a moderate candidate, though, that one of the progressives would agree to be a VP, Amanda. Can you imagine a Sanders or a Warren agreeing to be the number two on the ticket?
I do, actually. What you hear and what you sense from the electorate, and I think, you know, more and more as we get into the fight with Trump, people, you know, everybody is saying it's most important to win this election, it's most important to change who's in the White House. I think that will guide people's decisions in a way that maybe we haven't seen before. And you're certainly seeing it in the electorate, and I think that is going to transfer over to the candidates, especially as this field gets tighter.
Rob Stessman, do you think Democrats should be concerned if Joe Biden isn't the nominee about attracting African-American voters and getting their turnout in a general election?
I do. I think this is what the opportunity the Trump campaign senses, is that there's not a whole lot being said in the field of the current Democrats that has a lot of direct appeal to African-American voters. And Biden enjoys that support amongst the African-American community largely as a legacy from his being the vice president to President Obama. If Biden's out of the field, what fills that vacuum? There's some evidence that Bernie's positioned to be able to do that.
He finishes number two in the polls that I see of black voters.
That's right. But, you know, how do black voters react to who are generally more moderate in the Democrat electorate net? You know, how would they react if all of a sudden Bloomberg is on the rise? The stop and frisk policies of New York come back to haunt him, or is he able to make a connection and have an appeal? I think endorsements from the African American community will be very important going forward. I'll be fascinated to see if President Obama ever weighs in, especially if there's this abject panic of stop Bernie, you know, that could set in and manifest itself heading into Super Tuesday.
I don't know if you've noticed over the last couple of days, Michael Bloomberg's ads have featured President Obama. He's talking about Michael Bloomberg, praising him from when he was mayor of New York, Bloomberg using this archival footage. And for many voters, I think it could give the impression that Obama has actually endorsed Bloomberg. Is that fair to do in a campaign ad, Rob?
Oh, it's fair game. I mean, Joe Biden's closing ad in Iowa was basically 30 seconds of Obama's Medal of Freedom speech when he bestowed that honor upon then Vice President Biden. So I think we'll see Barack Obama speaking from archival footage in several candidates as we go forward.
We're talking with Amanda Renteria of Emerge America, Rob Stutzman, a Republican political consultant, joining us on Air Talk. Turning our attention to President Trump now, late Friday, the president moving out of their diplomatic positions, the EU ambassador, Gordon Sondland, who has been recalled from that position, and member of the National Security Council staff, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, both of them called by Democrats as witnesses in the House impeachment hearings. Amanda, your thoughts on the president targeting those individuals who we felt gave negative testimony about him?
I think it is in line with what he does. However, I think this can and may backfire on him. Because you had Senate Republicans weigh in here, they wanted to make sure that this wasn't retribution for coming to testify. And so I think it's going to be, these next couple of days are going to be interesting to see what happens as Senator Schumer comes out and says, I want to see what this discussion was about and why these folks were fired. And we're going to see whether or not this can unite any Senate Republicans with the conversation with Senate Democrats on what to do with this. But listen, a president can let go of folks, but I think there'll be more discussion here in the coming days because of how he did it.
And he makes not even the slightest effort to disguise it. And maybe that's one of the things that President Trump supporters like, is just, you know, he just flat out sees them as disloyal and so removes them from those positions. Rob, how do you think Republicans view it?
Oh, I think Republicans see it as he has a right to hire and fire anyone that he wants. And to be fair, Vindman wasn't fired. He's reassigned. He doesn't lose his job as a military officer. I think it was somewhat predictable that this would happen. But Trump does it in a way so as to humiliate him, which is just the way that this president behaves on a daily basis. I mean, regarding Sondland, he was a political appointee to start with. It was rather predictable that he would be recalled. And based on what we've learned about Sondland, it's probably good for the country that he's off the beat.
He was a major Trump donor, right?
Right. Yes. Well, big donor to the – he's a hotel magnate and was a big donor to the inaugural committee. And next thing he knew, he was finding himself up for this post to be ambassador to the EU.
We also have a report from the Washington Post that Secret Service personnel were billed up to $650 a night while staying at President Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in Palm Beach, Florida, as part of the detail to protect him when he was there. Amanda, your thoughts about the president's company profiting off of the president being at his residency or his resort with all these folks paying, for their rooms there? One of the things that Trump's son had said was that they would only be charged a token fee. They would not be charged rack rates, as it appears they are.
He has consistently done this. I mean, if you remember when he thought about where international leaders going to meet, it's always on his properties. It's always 100% consistent is what is best for Trump, not necessarily what is best for this country. Now, whether or not people have just gotten used to that, and so an article like this doesn't actually change anything. I think most people look at this, particularly on the Democratic side, and say, yep, this is absolutely consistent from day one. And I think these are the kinds of articles, though, that continue to fire up the Democratic base as we go into November. But I, over and over again, I'm consistently surprised that there are so many Republicans who really are silent when these kinds of articles pop up.
Rob, how does the company justify doing this?
Well, there's a justification in that the president has a right to go to his property. It's an unusual situation that he happens to own the hotel he's staying at. And so, sure, you should charge something for those rooms. They're being occupied and not on the market, so to speak. But the rack rate seems gross. I agree with Amanda. Is that the assumption is that they're milking this? It also raises the question: even if it is right to charge back to the Secret Service something for those rooms, he's spending, I believe, it's a third of his time as president has been down at Mar-a-Lago or on one of his properties, and so does that start to become an incentive? Amanda's right. I mean, this fires up the Democrat base. It's unfortunate Republicans won't look into it. And this from a president who regularly criticized Barack Obama for playing golf when he was president. And this one lives on a golf course a third of the time.
The Washington Post report that came out about this came out just before a federal appeals court ruled that Democrats can't sue the president over emoluments claims. More than 200 House and Senate Democrats had alleged that by not putting the Trump company into a blind trust, that violates the Constitution's foreign emoluments clause. It prohibits federal officials getting gifts from foreign countries. So what the signees to that lawsuit had claimed was that with foreign diplomats using Trump hotels, that the president's company benefits from that, and that runs afoul of the Constitution. But the court saying that the Democrats didn't have standing on that lawsuit. Well, I want to thank you both very much. So much to talk about in politics. We look forward to speaking with you both again. Thank you so much, Amanda. Thank you very much, Rob.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks. Rob Stutzman, a Republican political consultant, former Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Amanda Renteria, Senior Advisor of Emerge America, national organization that identifies and trains Democratic women seeking political office. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Much more to come in 90 seconds.